Good morning. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. With some of the highest rates in the country of domestic violence, substance abuse, depression, and other mental health disorders, there's a high need for quality mental health services in every area of our state. The vast distances between communities, very few roads, and limited travel options means that most communities in Alaska are lacking access to consistently available, high-quality mental health care. On today's edition of Line One, psychologist Dr. Kathy Von Hippel joins me to discuss how technology is working to solve this problem by using, I guess, what I will crudely call video chat technology. Whether it's someone who has challenges leaving the home due to health or mobility problems, or someone who lives in a village on the Nooshkak River, this technology allows anyone with a device and an internet connection to access a variety of mental health services without leaving their home. Dr. Kathy Von Hippel is a lifelong Alaskan who has worked in private practice in Anchorage for nearly two decades. In 2018, Dr. Von Hippel and her colleague, Dr. Patrick Doolin, developed Alaska Telepsychology to serve teenagers and adults struggling with depression or anxiety as they manage life transitions. Her other area of expertise includes autism spectrum disorder and giftedness. Welcome to the show, Kathy. Appreciate you carving out some time for us today.
Thank you.
All right. For those of you out there listening, remember this is a call-in show. So if you have a question about how telemedicine, telepsychology works, or if you want to know if this might be a useful platform for you to access service, please give us a call or email us your questions or comments. In Anchorage, we can be reached on our local number. That's 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or you can call us toll free from anywhere outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to participate is to email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. If this is your first time emailing, you got to spell out line one, L-I-N-E-O-N-E at alaskapublic.org. All right. I guess before we get into telepsychology, let's, tell us a little bit about your background in Alaska. You've been here for a long time. Your name's been around. What have you been up to?
Well, I grew up here. My dad is Bill Compton. He's a OBGYN and was part of a group of public health doctors who came here in the 60s. And so I grew up right by the hospital and was a big skier and a runner and a hiker. And then, like a lot of people, I went to college out of state. And then I went to graduate school and a postdoc. And after I finished my postdoc, I returned. And I've been in private practice ever since.
Okay, now you were with Psychology Resources for a long time, but now are you no longer with them? You've branched out with Dr. Nolan?
Right. So I was at Psychology Resources as a partner for 15 years.
Yeah.
And now I'm doing this telepsychology practice called Alaska Telepsychology.
All right. Well, let's, I guess, get right into it. What is telepsychology? What is it, and why is it relevant, important, good for Alaska?
Okay. Well, to begin with, 64% of Alaskans who have mental health problems are not receiving services at present. And a lot of that has to do with barriers to access. So the opportunity of telepsychology is to decrease the barriers to access and get more people served in both rural and urban areas. So telepsychology is the practice of mental health service delivery using an interactive telephone or video conferencing system. And so the provider and the patient are in different locations. And this has become possible recently because there's been technological advances so that we can encrypt those electronic systems to protect people's personal health information. So it had been that you needed really complicated, very expensive systems in order to provide video conferencing to people in the bush, and that they would have to go into a clinic basically and see you from there. But now you can connect directly with a patient from their home or their office or their cabin, wherever they are, so long as they have a cellular connection.
Yeah, my only foray into telemedicine or telehealth was when I was working at another facility when I was at Bridges, and the owner there had he had to buy all this equipment, and the clinic on the other end had to have the same equipment. It was fiber optic cable. It was very expensive to get. And I did a few of them, and I'd meet with a teenager who's sitting essentially on a stretcher in a hospital clinic. It's kind of an awkward situation. But now it's like going online for your Wells Fargo, or, I mean,
it can be. There are a lot of different systems. The system we use is very elegant. It's very simple. And so what we do is we will email or text whatever a patient wants, a reminder for the phone call or for the appointment. And all they have to do is hit the link that's included in their reminder. And so they don't download any software. They just hit a link and they show up in a virtual waiting room. And I can see them from my end. I see them in my virtual waiting room. And if I'm not quite ready, there's a chat box, and I can chat and say, 3 more minutes, I'll be right there, finish up the session I'm on, and then I exit the person I'm on, and I bring in my new patient from the virtual waiting room.
Okay, now just so folks know, I mean, there's all sorts of HIPAA regulations, and the technology now is compliant with all the HIPAA, the health information privacy.
That's right. And, you know, what has happened in the past, not just in Alaska, but all across the U.S., is people have used FaceTime and Skype, which can be easily hacked. And we're advised that is an invasion of people's HIPAA rights, and that we can't do that as providers. And so so the technology that's used, it's not just using Zoom or products people are familiar with. You pay for a higher level of service so that your signal is basically torrented through a million different servers all over, ricocheting all over the planet. So it makes it very hard for someone to trace your connection. So that's what makes it encrypted, is that the signal is ricocheted all over.
Okay. So if it's compliant, one of the problems with providing services anywhere outside of an office setting is that it's not reimbursable by healthcare or by insurance. So how is that? My understanding is that this is the same as if you're in an office as far as insurance goes, reimbursement.
So Alaska Tribal Native Health Consortium has been doing video conferencing since the early, around 1998, 2000. But it's been, private practitioners have been unable to do that until recently because the cost of the infrastructure is astronomical.
Right.
Additionally, the insurance wouldn't reimburse. In 2016, Governor Bill Walker signed House Bill 234 into law, and that requires any insurance plan in Alaska to cover telepsychology services. And this is part of a larger effort to reduce the cost of healthcare in our state. It's astronomical, and it's really a barrier to access, especially for mental health, because that would be certainly come after other kinds of medical expenses for most families. So now, are the companies providing insurance in our state are required by law to reimburse for telehealth. And when we bill for that, we bill a little bit differently. There's some slightly different codes, but those are technicalities that have been worked out largely.
The technology's been around for a little while. It's been in the lower 48. People are using it a lot more in rural areas. Can you talk a little bit about the development of this, how it's been used outside or in medicine? And now it seems kind of new that it's coming over into psychology and mental health.
It's very common in rural areas in the lower 48 to have video conferencing technology to connect. For example, I've done a lot of work on the border of Mexico around San Luis.
Uh-huh.
And it's really long and difficult travel to get there, and not a lot of specialists are willing to go. And so as much service as possible is completed through video conferencing before either the patient travels to a major metropolitan area like Tucson or Phoenix, or the provider comes there. And it's a way for to reduce wait times and to improve the quality of care.
All right. So why did you guys decide, you and Dr. Nolan, decide to bring this up here and to, I mean, there's not a lot of people doing it, right? At this point, maybe that will change. Maybe we'll have some more access. But what was the sort of the impetus or to bring it to Alaska?
I've been interested in this for a really long time, but the technology wasn't available, wasn't affordable or manageable for a small practice, and the reimbursement wasn't there. But, you know, I have a concern that that the patients I have seen for the last 15 years in Anchorage, quite often they'll travel in from Kodiak or
right.
from wherever to have a psych eval of their family member. And they're giving up a week of vacation. They're spending a lot of money on a hotel for mm-hmm. what's not actually fun to come in for these appointments. And then the follow-up care is pretty pretty disappointing because they don't have specialists in their area. And so I've been concerned about how do we provide care for Alaskans where they're at all over the state so that we're not driving talented people out of our excellent state by not being able to support the needs of their family members.
What kinds of folks are you finding? How long have you been open and operating here?
So we've been seeing patients for about 4 months, and I've been practicing telepsychology for longer than that, for about a year, seeing patients in Arizona on a different contract, different thing. But the kinds of people that this is appropriate for are people who want long-term support with problems of daily living, and they want to have access to care from their home, their office, or elsewhere. So an example would be, like, let's say you have a teacher in a rural area, and the local social worker or counselor, psychologist is a friend or a neighbor, and they just want to be able to speak to someone in a more private context. That would be a good person. The kinds of people who aren't perfect for this, who should not come, are people who are in acute crisis. And the problem is that if someone is in acute crisis and very quite unstable, it's obviously harder to read all of the body language cues and that are important to look at in that situation. And so we would want someone in crisis to go, you know, to the ER and to be looked at directly by a counselor in person.
And that's not much different than private practice.
No.
In-person private practice. I mean, you can't handle chronically mentally ill folks with an hour session a week long-term. I mean, they need more intensive resources. So that's not necessarily a limitation of telepsychology.
No, it's not. And it's not a hospital, so we're
right.
not open 24/7. So those people are better served elsewhere.
Now, people have the idea that maybe telepsychology is a, you mentioned a crisis line. It's sort of like, that's not what it is.
No, it's not. So telepsychology is just like a regular, or it can be, for us it is, a regular private practice where you have a dedicated clinician, you have appointment times scheduled regularly, you have a treatment plan, you work on your treatment goals, you end therapy when you've reached your treatment goals. So the only difference is that instead of sitting next to each other in armchairs in a office room, you're meeting on the video conferencing link. And it seems like that would be a very awkward way to meet and that people would have difficulty connecting. But I have been very surprised to find that in reality, my patients have been more engaged and more relaxed because the context of where they're calling from is comfortable for them. So they haven't had to leave work under stress to get to a daytime appointment, because we often see people at night and on the weekends. They haven't encountered unfamiliar people in the lobby, so they didn't feel uncomfortable about that. We have people calling from inside their trucks, outside their, you know, at lunch hour in their truck, in their living room, on the porch of their cabin, wherever they have a cellular connection. So people tend to feel really pampered, like this is a house call, essentially, and that you're prioritizing their comfort and their time, their schedule, to help them with their mental health. So it's something that video conferencing is something that we think of as artificial or uncomfortable, but in a strange way, it's more comfortable.
It sounds like, I mean, I would expect, and my experience of it was pretty limited, and it was, you know, a while ago, but it was difficult. You got a client sitting in a hospital room somewhere on a gurney. You know, they're not in their own home. They had to go to the facility and get linked up. And,
yes.
You know, it's not, yeah, there's a surgery, you know, a bunch of needles, surgery center, the Village Clinic. So, but it sounds like this is, the way you're doing it is more, it's not just for people who are remotely far, far away. It's not just for people who may be, I mean, it seems like a really good thing for people who may be homebound with physical disabilities or.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Obviously there's people with physical disabilities. There's people who are a little apprehensive about going in public.
Yeah, social phobias.
Yeah, who have
panic attacks.
Transportation issues. There's also just working family issues. So as an example, Prentice, you see a lot of teenagers, and I've worked with a lot of teenagers. So if I'm seeing a teenager, the teenager can be in one place, and his parents can each be in another place, and we can all share the screen. And nobody had to leave work, and we can talk for 10 minutes. Most parents can take 10 minutes off of their workday to connect, and they're really happy to say, this is the least you need to know, Dr. Von Hippel, please talk about this with my kid. And then the parents can disconnect. They step out of the virtual waiting room.
Go back to their desk.
They go back to their work, and we see the patient, and usually we have a plan, and the patient... we can call, of course, we can have the parents come back on. But quite typically, we'll write in our electronic medical record, in the electronic chart note, what our plan is. And then the patient's parents can access that, or the patient can access that through the patient portal. So they can have all the documentation of what happened. It's transparent and available.
So your notes, the plan, everything is, they have access to their record?
Yes.
Oh, that's different.
It is different. So, and in fact, part of that big shift, I think, in medical care is making sure that healthcare is as transparent as possible,
right.
That
yeah.
People know, this is my treatment plan. These are the operational goals. And there really should never be anything written in a chart note ever that would... make a patient feel uncomfortable. It should all just be a matter of fact.
Right.
And so in that spirit, it's not a problem for everyone to read the same thing.
Yeah, it's just very different than traditional practices where your chart notes are they're kind of private unless it's subpoenaed or something. But that seems like it's, I don't know, I'm just kind of thinking about it. It seems like a kind of an interesting idea. You have to write fairly meticulous notes that way.
And brief.
Yeah, very brief.
And so these notes are private. The only people who can see them are the patients and the provider, right?
Right, yeah.
So, and in reality, HIPAA laws require that we provide a copy of our chart notes always to
right.
people who ask for them.
Yep.
And we interpret those to make that process go well. So there's a big movement in the lower 48 to do charting with patients.
Right.
And I think actually that's not so revolutionary, because because oftentimes we're making a plan and we're verbally summarizing it at the end of a session. So, okay, the plan is for the next week you're going to focus on 1, 2, 3. So
and then we just write that down.
It's just writing it down. But many people benefit from being able to see it written down, and then they're better able to adhere.
And then go back and look at it during the week.
One of the purposes of telepsychology, Prentice, is to improve coordination of care.
And let's get back to that right after we take a short break. For those of you who might be tuning in late, my guest today is psychologist Dr. Kathy Von Hippel. We are discussing how technology can help people access a variety of mental health services, whether they are homebound or live in a remote area that may have limited or no service options. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Kathy Von Hippel. I'm Prentice Pemberton, and this is Line One, Your Health Connection. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is psychologist Dr. Kathy Von Hippel. Our focus for today's conversation is how technology and specifically telehealth or telepsychology can help people access a variety of mental health services for whatever reason, whether they be homebound, live in a remote area, like the convenience of it, I guess, is one of the things we've talked about. If you have a question about anything related to our topic today, if you want to know if this platform might be right for you in your situation, please give us a call. And Dr. Von Hippel should be able to answer just about anything related to how the technology works or what kind of services are available. Please remember, you can email your questions or comments to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us locally in Anchorage at 550-8433 or reach us anywhere outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. All right. Right before the break, you mentioned one of the purposes of telepsychology is, you said, the coordination of care.
Yeah, the House Bill 234 is explicit, where it asks for people performing telehealth to obtain a permission to send a summary of treatment to the primary care physician.
Okay.
And that's pretty easy to do if you have the technology to do. To organize this, so you basically email a consent, the patient signs it, and then you email the treatment plan through this secure HIPAA encrypted platform to the primary care provider. So it's going from one medical record that's encrypted to another medical record that's encrypted
directly.
Yeah, you know, it's there's still a lot of people who fax.
Yeah,
and faxing is kind of a nightmare. It's you know, obviously it can end up in the wrong place. And so this has a higher likelihood of success.
Okay, so if someone wants to access your services, and I know we have a lot of information online, including how to connect with Alaska Telepsychology, your business, and a lot of other resources on telemedicine and telehealth, and people can get started on their reading and educating themselves. But what does it look like if somebody, if I wanted to call you and say, Kathy, I want to see you on, you know, whatever day, what can I expect as far as the process?
So what you can expect is that you would either you phone or you email, and you'd email the info@akTelepsych.com address, which is on our website. So you phone or you email, leave a message and say, I think I'd like to have some services. And you'll get a call back from a clinician within 24 hours. So this is pretty standard for every physical private practice.
Right.
It's traditional. You get a call back and a little discussion of whether the person's needs are appropriate for this practice. And if it's sorted and it doesn't seem appropriate, they get referred elsewhere. If it looks like, gosh, it really would be perfect, that sounds ideal, then an appointment is made. And I simply collect someone's email and telephone number. And then I tell them to expect to be contacted within the next day by our practice manager. And our practice manager calls, and the practice manager will either talk on the phone or send a form to be completed by email to get all of the insurance and demographic information, and then does a little tutorial on how to use Doxy. And we'll actually do the video conferencing with our patient before they have a scheduled appointment so that there's no anxiety around just making that happen.
So your office manager or your practice manager might call using the platform.
Well, she calls them by phone and teaches them how to do it. And then they connect using it so she can prove that they can do it.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes there's a little hitch here or there. And they're all things that are very simple from our end to problem solve because we've now done it a billion times. And so we just walk our patients through it. It does not take long. And then they see how easy it is and they're happy. We also tell people if they're not sure about video conferencing that we can have a session. And if they feel like this is unsuitable for them, then we won't charge them. And they can, and if they need help finding someone on the ground, we can help them to find a therapist that will meet with them in person.
Okay, so it's like a free trial.
Yeah,
if you don't like it.
Yeah.
Money back guarantee.
The other thing
we will catch fish.
Right. The other thing that's a little curious about it is that we do sometimes see our patients in person. So like this week, I'm in Anchorage. I'm doing a lot of assessments, but I'm also seeing patients in person who I normally video conference with. In the future, we're hoping to start bringing assessment clinics to rural areas where we travel in and we provide, do testing for many, many people and provide the service for the week. And then we travel out. So instead of having a whole family come to us, we will go there. So, and that's also possible because a lot of the technology that, well, it used to be that all of the psychological tests that we use for diagnosing things like learning disorders or autism was all in suitcases. And now it's all, we can have it in between.
The two giant bags of testing devices.
Yeah. Right. And now we need two iPads and a Mac.
Wow.
And so what that means is if I have someone in Nome to evaluate, I can have a video conferencing appointment with their parents and collect everything from the intake, get a history. I can upload videos of them, their behavior in school. I can communicate with teachers. I also can email in this encrypted manner behavior rating scales for various people to complete. And so that when I hit the ground, all that has to happen is the stuff, the clinical interview and the things that must be done face to face. But 2/3 of it does not.
That's interesting. All right, we have a phone call, so we'll go to Amelia in Eagle River. You're on line one. Go ahead.
Hello, doctors. Just a quick question. I imagine a lot of your people that go through this telemedicine live out in remote areas. And we often, out in remote areas, don't have the fastest bandwidth. And I wonder if, sometimes FaceTime isn't possible, voice only, and how you guys deal with that. And another question is insurance. I know that some insurances won't cover telemedicine. How is that coming along?
Okay, awesome questions. So the first thing about the bandwidth is you're right that the bandwidth in some areas is fluctuating, and or it's not strong at all. So you have to have bandwidth to begin with, and you have to have a device to be suitable for to participate in this. And what happens is we connect via video conferencing, and what if the bandwidth degrades, it will collapse to audio only. And the way insurance works and all of these fussy details is if you are connecting on an encrypted platform, even if the visual part degrades and is audio only, it's still coverable by insurance. And then in terms of your insurance question, we have this new state law, House Bill 234, that says all insurance plans in Alaska have to cover telepsych services the same as in-person mental health services. So some policies, you might have a policy that covers no mental health services. In that case, it's not going to cover telepsych. Right. But if it covers mental health services, it has to cover telepsych. And, you know, like you're in Eagle River, and we all know how treacherous the drive can be at certain hours in the winter into Anchorage. So some people from Eagle River would say, hey, I would prefer not to spend 2 hours in the car. I'd like to do telepsych. And there's zero travel time and flexible scheduling. And they can do the sort of mental math on quality of life and say, well, I'd rather spend 20 minutes learning how to do this, or 10 minutes, or actually less, how to use this video conferencing technology than drive.
Right, and actually that was the question was related to that exactly, that the telemedicine is only covered if it is, like you said, through that encrypted device, but sometimes at remote locations, that's not always guaranteed 100% of the time.
Right, so quite a few people are urban. So this service is to reduce barriers to mental health services for all Alaskans, urban and rural. And, there are many people who would prefer technology-mediated treatment and who would prefer the convenience of it. So, for example, we're seeing patients at night and on the weekends, and that is helpful for some folks who don't have flexible schedules, like teachers. It's really difficult for them to take time off during the school day. So yeah. It was helpful to have a time on the weekend. Physicians, it would be nearly impossible for them to come during the day, so they would appreciate an evening appointment.
Seems like a lot of people who are really busy and have jobs that keep them occupied quite often would benefit from being able to access this. Thank you, Amelia. I appreciate the call. It sounds like bandwidth is the limitation, but if you have the ability to link up, that's all you need, is the first link up, and then you're covered.
That's right. That's all you need.
Okay.
And we actually have not had a single person unable to connect. So knock on wood, that should continue. We've certainly had the visual part degrade to audio only, but every single session has happened as scheduled.
Have you had some fairly remote areas call in, or smaller areas yet? Or are you kind of building that part of the practice?
Well, like Bethel.
Okay.
And Bethel around 5, when everyone gets out of work, the bandwidth just
dumps.
Yeah, it dumps. And then and last week I was talking to someone on their cabin lot in Long Lake, and you know they had to stand by the rock and facing north, and then they had a cellular connection.
And so stand on their left foot and
tap
their head. Yeah.
Right, but it still worked.
Okay. So what kind of services are available? You mentioned, I know that much of your background is in testing, right? You've done a little therapy, testing. What services are available via telehealth? Can you do testing via telehealth, or is it, because you mentioned going out and setting up, you know, some clinics to do that testing. It's more involved. What services are available telehealth?
So,
and what don't work so well, maybe, or are there any?
Okay. So things that don't work so well are people who are in acute crisis,
right,
and elementary age kids.
Okay.
So, and in our case, we have a physical office where we're seeing elementary kids in person in Anchorage, but that doesn't help people out in the bush.
Correct.
On the other hand, we provide parent consultations. And so if I have someone who's in Fairbanks or at Eielson Air Force Base and they have a child with developmental disabilities, we can't provide treatment directly to the kid, but we can provide parent consultations, and they can upload videos of what the child's doing, and we can help them to understand what to do in the context of where they are.
Different interventions, yep. Approaches.
So we can provide parent consultations for the little kids.
Middle school and up?
Middle school and up are doing very well.
Okay.
Now, if for some reason a person was unable to connect or meaningfully use it, of course, we would recommend we would discontinue and
right.
refer them to another provider. But we've not had that. And, you know, I didn't grow up with anything electronic. And I think like a lot of Alaskans my age, I was just feral as a child.
Running in the woods.
Yeah, I was just running in the woods, playing kick the can, lighting fires with leaves, you know, just fun stuff. And so, but kids now have grown up with screens and they're perfectly comfortable in a way that's very organic for them and seems unnatural. From an older perspective, but it works for them. So,
well, that was one of the questions I had, and you mentioned that before we got on the air. Is I was like, you know, this relationship thing, especially with therapy, it's so important to have that connection. That is the most important part of the therapeutic relationship, is the connection you have. And so everybody says, well, video conferencing, it doesn't replace a face-to-face meeting, right? And you can't build trust over video conference. But you mentioned kids. This is how they prefer. I mean, there's a comfort with it that we can't really understand, right?
There is a comfort with it. And I completely understand the skepticism about telepsychology.
Right.
I, too, was skeptical until I did it for quite a while. And I started by doing it at an integrated care clinic on the border of Arizona, where I would do something similar in the border of Mexico and Arizona, where I was providing telepsych services and then traveling in and out. And I've been shocked at how effective it is. And in that case, I'm doing it with a language barrier as well. So it's a surprise. And it's surprising to me how well it works. And I believe that telepsychology is where this field is going in the future, I think that's where we're all headed.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get into a little bit more about that later, how people can get involved. But you mentioned that this is barriers to access is one of the biggest reasons that telepsychology is helpful and useful. But one of the biggest barriers to accessing services in this state is the rule that Medicaid, people who receive Medicaid have to be seen in a clinic with a psychiatrist on staff.
Right.
And this doesn't help that, correct?
No,
this,
it does not.
It's
doesn't
the same
help that.
As other insurances.
Right. It doesn't help that. And there's no, I have no workaround for that one.
No, there's not. And hopefully that's something that maybe we can start more a conversation as a community, is how do we serve many of the folks in our community that need it the most, that are on a 9 or 10 month waiting list at a community mental health center, because that's the only place that takes Medicaid these days. And I think it's a huge hole, but I also understand that if they open up everybody to be able to take Medicaid, it costs the state a lot of money. There's a big financial hit there. But that's just my little soapbox, because I know everybody that I know would be willing to take a percentage of Medicaid, and then
absolutely.
We would provide a lot of access to services for kids who need it.
And actually, everyone that I know who works in mental health does see people pro bono.
I do too,
And is happy to do that in certain cases. But there's only a certain amount of that you can provide while sustaining a clinic.
All right. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is psychologist Dr. Kathy Von Hippel. We are discussing how technology can help people access a variety of mental health services, whether they are homebound, live in an area that has limited service options, or just like the convenience of being able to do therapy from your own home. If you have a question or a comment about today's topic, you can reach us in three ways. You can send us an email to line1@alaskapublic.org, call us in Anchorage at 550-8433, or reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. So if you have a question about telepsychology, if it would work for you, any of the technical details, give us a call, and we'll see if Dr. Von Hippel can answer your question. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation about telepsychology. I'm Prentice Pemberton, and this is Line One, your health connection. We'll be right back.
Funding for Line One, your health connection, was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. For folks who might be tuning in late, my guest today is psychologist Dr. Kathy Von Hippel, and we are discussing how technology can help people access a variety of mental health services through telepsychology. If you have a question or a comment, please get it into us here in the next 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes or so, and we can get you on the air. You can email us your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us locally at 550, that's in Anchorage, that's locally, 550-8433. Or you can reach us toll-free from anywhere you might be listening at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, the show repeats tonight at 8. If you're listening to this on Wednesday evening, you'll be hearing a taped recording, and we will not be able to accept phone calls. All right. We had just started talking about services offered. What are you guys offering now, and what specific services can people expect to receive?
Okay. So we're providing psychological evaluations. And we are providing individual psychotherapy for elementary age kids that can be in person in Anchorage. In rural areas, we're not seeing elementary age kids because they can't engage well with this medium. But anyone over the age of 12 and higher, who's 12 to, you know, elderly, who is able to connect, is a good candidate for this. We're doing family therapy, couples therapy, and parent consultations.
Oh, parenting consultation. What is, how's that different than family therapy or?
Well, oftentimes parent consultations, you can think of it as the same way as family therapy.
Okay.
But if you have, it can be very psychoeducational.
Right.
So, like, let's say you have a kid with a learning disability. So you might consult with the parents about how, what it means, how to access services through the school district, what services realistically they should not expect, what services they can get privately, what to expect over the lifespan, how to support this disability at home, what kind of attitude to have towards their kid to help the child to feel comfortable, that sort of stuff. So it's like the least you need to know to be supportive of your family member who has an unusual need. Another example would be for middle-aged people, we'll call and say, I have a demented parent. Help me to negotiate that. How am I gonna, how do I manage that? And I am very frustrated. So what do I do? So then we can give, again, psychoeducational consultations on this is what you're looking at. This is what causes it. And this is what you could do to manage the situation.
All right. On another note, I've been a long time ago, I met with you and wanted to do a show or a program about psychological testing, right? Why parents would get their kid tested, under what circumstances, what it's good for, because it's a huge undertaking. It's a big ordeal. It takes time out. You got to have parents show up. I mean, the kids are going through all these tests. Why would somebody seek out? I mean, I got you here for telepsychology, but this is what you do also. Why would somebody seek out psychological testing for their kid versus, say, neuropsych testing? That's a question I get a lot, is why one versus the other?
Well, I
know you weren't prepared for that question, but I have you here.
So I can speak to the clinical testing, okay, clinical psychology part. So the people who are ideal for psychological testing have a problem that's enigmatic, that is mysterious. And typically they come to see me after a lot of people have had a stab at it. There have been a lot of really experienced teachers involved. Parents are sensible. They thought of everything they could think of, everything their parents could think of, everything their family friends could think of, and they're just smashing their head against the wall with whatever this issue is. And so they come and they say, what is going on? Sort it. And then I collect a history from the parents. I read all the medical records. I talk to the pediatrician. I talk to the teachers. I very often observe at school. And then I do the testing. So I have this volume of information to sort through. And it's sort of like I've zoomed out and I'm on the moon looking down. And right, I can see the big picture that people who are living with this person and are up close can't see. And then I do some usually intellectual testing, achievement testing, some behavioral testing to see if this person has problems with focus or impulsivity or anxiety or depression. And then I figure out if there's a cycle of issues. Usually there's a couple things going on. So if you had a learning problem, you would probably also have some anxiety or some depression, because it's a bummer to go to school every day and not learn.
Yeah.
And very
anxiety provoking.
It's very stressful. And so so it becomes the chicken and the egg cycle. And then so we get that diagnosed and then figure out what are some actionable, practical things we can do to intervene. So there's a lot of different styles of psychologists, and I'm very practical. And so if I'm talking to a parent, I want to give them something that they can understand. So, like, improve your child's executive functioning. Well, that, I don't even know what that means. make better decisions. That's something that the parent knew before they came into me. And so I want to give more specific recommendations. So I'll give you an example. I had a patient recently who was referred to me, and everyone was so frustrated. And I collected all that information and sorted it. And what I realized is that this little girl who was around 5, she wasn't talking. But when I looked at all of the notes, all of the reports, it became clear to me that she wasn't hearing. So she was referred for autism. And I stopped the evaluation and said, I think she is hard of hearing. And we need to stop now, take a pause, go get this evaluated. She ended up getting a cochlear implant.
Huh.
And she was going to be put in a self-contained classroom and was understood as profoundly autistic. But she couldn't talk because she couldn't hear. So that's an example of an actionable thing a parent can do. Go get this hearing checked.
Which significantly altered the course of this child's life.
Right.
Essentially. I mean, you get treated and stuck in something that you don't have is not helpful.
Right. And think about this. So now she has a cochlear implant and she's a 5-year-old, so she's not, she still doesn't speak very well, but then she would need a different kind of therapy.
Correct.
And so then we can get her the right kind of therapy for that.
All right. So if a parent has a young child that they're worried about because there's some unexplainable strange thing going on. I mean, for us, when we came to see you, it was a reading problem that did not match up at reading level in the first or second percentile in the IQ in the 98th. And so that didn't quite add up. Right.
Right.
It was, and nobody could figure it out. And we'd tried this and tried that. And the testing was really designed to ferret out exactly what was going on in order to tailor the treatment, right?
Right, and sometimes what happens is the school is not quite ready to commit to testing a child.
Often they are not.
Yeah, there's a lot of criteria.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, and so there are criteria for when the school district is allowed, basically, to spend the money to do that. But those criteria are different from parent criteria. So most parents want their kids to perform equal to their ability. And if that's not happening, they're concerned. And if all of the practical advice that they've gathered isn't working and they haven't been able to affect change after some time and they're still frustrated, then it's a good time to come. But the cool thing about psychological testing is we can do the least we need to do to get the job done. And in terms of neuropsych testing, I tend to send people for neuropsych testing who've had a head injury.
Right.
Or
if there's some organic
trauma.
Right.
And that's who I send there. But for diagnosing problems like learning disabilities, learning style, anxiety, ADHD, autism, various developmental delays.
Which can all overlap and look like each other.
Yes, right.
That's super complex.
That's all clinical psych.
All right. So we've spent a good bit of time talking about telepsychology and clients, and I'm sure we have some professionals out there that are like thinking, oh, like, maybe I could work from home. maybe I could work on vacation, or maybe I could see my clients who are need to be seen more regularly if I'm out of town for 3 weeks.
Right. Okay.
That kind of stuff. So how complicated is it to get set up?
We have a paperless system.
Okay.
And it took me a year.
Wow.
1 year of working between 20 and 50 hours a week on this project to get to create the infrastructure with my partners. So it sounds simple, and the experience for patients is very, very simple. But that's there's a lot of invisible complexity and really tedious detail that has been attended to. But there's a couple really good resources. There's something called the American Telemedicine Association.
Okay.
And it's not just for physicians anymore. And they have a big conference. And actually, Dr. Ferguson, Stuart Ferguson, who is a local doctor, is the president now of that, of American Telemedicine Association. And there's also, at the American Psychological Association, they have a lot of position papers on things like how to provide informed consent. We have this idea that we need to explain to people what they're getting into, essentially, and have them agree and be transparent when we start mental health intervention. And so you have to address a lot of issues that relate to technology. So the American Psychological Association, or whatever the equivalent is for counselors, social workers, they have a lot of guidance on it.
It's not limited to psychologists.
No.
LCSWs, LPCs, just as any other, as you would be reimbursed by insurance, correct?
Absolutely. But the really important thing for providers to know is this is not Skype. It's not FaceTime. It has to be an encrypted platform. And whatever their timeline is, I would encourage them to multiply by 4 to get that sorted.
Because you have to have policies in place to have it. You need to cover your bases, right?
Right, including you have to have a HIPAA officer, which It's hard to get a volunteer on that one.
No, because it's horrible.
Because it's horrible.
It's the worst job.
Yeah. So, so it takes a long time. What sounds simple is very complex. Invisibly, thankfully, to the patients, but it takes a lot of work. And the critical thing for us all to understand is that the patient has to be in the state where the clinician has a license. So if I actually was seeing patients when I was traveling earlier this year, and I was in Guatemala on Lake Atitlan watching a sunset.
Wow.
Video conferencing with a patient on my encrypted connection. And that is, that's legitimate.
I want to do that.
Yeah. We'll just go together. So, but the important thing is I'm licensed in Alaska,
right,
and my patient was in Alaska.
Physically, they have to be in Alaska. They can't be on vacation too?
Yeah, technically they need to be in Alaska, but I've talked to the liability trust at APA, and they've said that they blur that just for practical purposes. If someone's in Hawaii and their vacation went wrong, you can talk to them. So, yeah, technically.
Right. All right. So that's I couldn't just sign up today, get an app, and start going. It's a little bit more involved than that.
Yes, I would not advise you to wing it.
All right. We got a couple minutes left. So is there anything that I've missed or left out or that you really want to kind of get out there to folks as they think about why they might want to access this or use it? I can think of a number of clients that I work with who don't really like coming to the office for a lot of reasons. I mean, they're high profile people. A lot of people know them and they don't want to sit in my lobby.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what I was thinking of when you said that is there's some challenges.
Yeah.
And so the challenges is that the patient has to be willing to learn a little about technology and also to be MacGyver. Do you remember that show, MacGyver?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So MacGyver it's this. I don't know.
Gets out of a room with a matchbook.
Yeah,
and
he always has some
tin
trick.
Foil.
It's a duct tape or something. So you have to MacGyver a little bit. And so, for example, we were talking earlier about how if the cellular drops in strength, you can lose visual and go to audio only. And so then we work together to MacGyver the situation, and I'll text. Hey, go back into the virtual waiting room or restart your computer. Or they'll send me a text and say, oh, I launched from Safari, not Google Chrome. And so it takes a little jerry-rigging, and it doesn't take much time. Usually it's like 30 seconds. But, you have to have a sense of humor and keep in mind that that's the cost of living in a rural area, that there's not great bandwidth.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Dr. Van Hippel. I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us today.
Thank you.
All right. For anyone interested in reading more about telepsychology or telehealth in general, I've posted some resources and information on our show page to get you started. Just go to alaskapublic.org and click on the link to today's program. Next week, Dr. Jay Butler will be here for a discussion about antibiotic stewardship with his guests Ben Leslie and Thaddeus Wilkinson. So be sure to tune in and learn more next Wednesday, October 17th at 10 a.m., repeating at 8. Eric Bork did our web editing for today's show. Dave Waldron was our audio engineer. Appreciate you taking the time to join me today on Line 1. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.